to the Pink Flyer.
David Gilmour, guitariste et chef de Pink Floyd, avec Rick Wright, organiste, Roger Waters, bassiste, et Nick Mason, batteur.
If I can remember what it was that we were going to play next, I'd tell you, but I can't.
January 19th, 1968.
Oh yeah,
well, this your five man concert.
Yeah, that was.
Because I lived in Lewes.
Well, I didn't live in Lewes at the time, but that was nearby. It's not so far from where I lived, and you could get. It was difficult to get to. You could get there by train and bus. Again, I often you had to trek to these things, and hey. Yeah, it was at the Town Hall, which is largely unchanged now as it was. It's one of the probably few venues that's basically as it was back in the day, 50 years ago.
Town Halls are great survivors often, aren't they?
Which is quite reassuring when you go back.
Mm.
It was the 50th anniversary of that in 2018. Bobby, again, we did a whole commemorative exhibition. We arranged with the council, we did it in the foyer, and we had photographs of the Floyd. Not obviously that performance, because there aren't any.
I thought you two might have bagged one.
There's two halls at the, if you've ever been to the Lewes Town. There's the main hall. And then there's a smaller hall next door to it. You could just a couple of swing doors. Close, you know. And they sometimes they always used to have. They might have a group in one room, and then there'd be the support, and then it'd be, however money. Often it was like one in the main one, and it was this particular concert was put on by. You might have his name, but Norman, I remember. He was raising money, basically, for the local football, Lewes Football Club.
Yes.
And he was an older guy, but he put on a few people that were quite unexpected. Apparently, they didn't initially want the Pink Floyd, but they were too expensive.
Right.
The other, people like Hendrix and who else was The Move, I think they wanted. Or did The Move play? But there was somebody of a reasonable level. And the Floyd were a little bit cheaper, you see, by 68, because they hadn't had a hit singles after, because,
And prices on the circuit were quite important, weren't they?
You could be a one-hit wonder otherwise, couldn't you? People forget you. That was the way it was regarded, almost. The bands, the thing about the Floyd was they were one of the first bands, weren't they, to insist on doing albums, and they'd already started to be that way inclined, as we know, we were saying about not playing their singles.
Yes.
But they still were required to do singles, and Apples and Oranges, which actually now seems really an interesting single.
Yeah, it's successful. Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't a hit, you know.
No.
And of course, obviously they're having all that trouble with Sid, and he was their main songwriter. What are they going to do? It was quite a dilemma for them, but they were determined to carry on with being rock stars, wasn't it? They wanted to have a career in it. But
so, did you know before you went to that concert that there was going to be five of them up there? Or?
I'd heard that there might be. It was in the music press and things. They said. David Gilmour was. He hadn't formally become a member, I don't think.
There's a little picture of him in the press, a little side-on looking very handsome.
So they did have a few photographs of the five of them.
Yeah, they took them at Kensal Rise Primary School in January 68, which is quite interesting to me because I actually lived almost opposite that school. I didn't realise that they were taken at that school while I lived there.
Oh, right.
And not until I moved away. I'd quite like to go back one day and say, why on earth did they choose you? Of course, they'd have no idea now, would they?
No, oh, no, no, no. Probably, they wouldn't even know it probably happened, you know?
No.
No, it's an extraordinary thing. I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, yeah, so it was quite curious to see if he would be, there would be, he would be playing with them as well. And because the rumours had gone around a bit that Sid was having problems or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but obviously, once you follow a group, you want to stick with them, see what's the next turn to the wheel or what's happening. So we went there, and there was quite an interesting... I've also heard other people tell me stories about it as well, you know, their impressions as well. When you went in, there was these big burly guys that were the local wrestlers. They were the bouncers.
Right.
The Winter Brothers.
Yeah.
Funny enough, there's a guy... Well, I rent a store off, and he's one of the family.
Ah,
yeah, and they, yeah. They were still a and wrestler. Still, there are some of the Winter Brothers, next generation, or the grandchildren, or whatever, that still are wrestlers.
Right.
Everybody was quite well behaved, of course, being this sort of rural British town.
Yes,
and. The support band were Granny's Intentions, an Irish band. I think they were on DRAM.
Right.
And I did actually get to speak to them when we did our radio show. I've tracked them down, the lead singer and the bass player. The bass player turned out to be living in Crawley, of all places. Although he was Irish, he moved to Britain and stayed here. And also the lead singer had his own music career. As a sort of solo artist, you know, more like a folk, not quite a folk singer, but subsequently. He was quite young at the time. He was about 17 or 18, apparently. And they all went out for a drink with the Floyd at the local pub.
Ah, before the gig or after the gig?
Before, because they got there a reasonable time, you know. And it's right on the high street. And they just, you know, it probably wasn't difficult. You could nip out the back door and it's a couple of houses away almost. And they said, oh, and I said, well, how was Sid, you know? Well, I said, oh, he's all right, you know. So they say, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe some of the time he was. I mean, occasionally, maybe he would have.
Yeah.
So it was quite interesting. And the promoter's son, who I spoke to, I didn't meet him, but he'd been backstage with the Floyd, you know, and he said he remembered playing Chopsticks on the piano with Rick Wright.
Oh, really?
In the dressing room, there was a piano there, you know. And I asked him about Sid. Oh, well, he seemed all right, you know, but he'd be just probably a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say, I don't think he was. Apparently, years ago, earlier on, he'd been quite the life and soul of the party years before, people say, don't they? But so maybe he got more and more subdued as not just because of drugs and the mental
sucked out
thing.
Of him. And
there was and he said there was a smell of hashish in the that sweet smell. He said, you know, because he was only this guy was Mike. He was only 16, 15 or 16 himself at the time. Unfortunately, he died a couple of years ago. But I don't know if his father's still alive, but he was last year. I think he was still alive. He was about 98 or something in the old people's home. And in fact, Bruce and I met him at that when we did this thing on the actual day of the we did an evening with I got the light show projectors and we had played some music, actually was Floyd music from a live concert at the time.
Oh, wow.
Right near as possible.
Yes.
And we did like 2 hours there. And the original promoter turned up. And I've got a photograph of him with me in front of the facsimile of the poster with the autographs of the Floyd on, including Sid's.
And the autographs survived, the genuine.
There were the genuine ones around somewhere.
Yes.
And they had two photographs of the Floyd as well, but they were fully autographed with all five of them.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, of course, they would be worth quite serious money.
Not at the performance, those photos. It's the light, just the light shots.
Those promotion photos, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
They must have had there and they'd signed at the time, you know.
So the concert itself, what do you remember about the concert?
Well, it would have been... I remember then they... did Scream Their Last Scream.
Okay.
I'm sure they did. But I think it was beginning to metamorphose into careful with that axe, usually. You know, I've always reckoned they're related, really. I always regarded it at the time. It was the careful with that axe was son of Scream, really.
No, I've never thought of that, but yeah, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Yeah,
and in the atmospheres, you know, and it's slightly gothic-y, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's another interesting, there's an argument to say that Sid was one of the first goths.
Yes. He said, you know, Scream, like
I know he didn't do, but obviously that he sort of turned on the channel, and the Floyd seemed to carry on with the idea of the concept for years later, didn't they, probably?
So can you picture them on the stage now? What if you're stood in front of the stage, were you somewhere near the stage? Do you remember
much? Quite close, I remember.
So left to right, who's left to right as you're looking at the stage?
Oh, I can't remember that. No. I remember...
Were Gilmore and Sid Barrett next to one another?
There was the usual format. But as far as I recall it, David was standing behind him, almost like a catcher. He could watch him closely, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't always play. And sometimes he looked a bit nervous, a bit apprehensive.
That makes perfect sense.
I mean, he wasn't that familiar with all the whole set, was he? I mean, it was obviously he's a really professional musician, and he was even at the time. He'd made money before they did, didn't he?
Yes.
But obviously they got it right in a different sort of way, didn't they?
Mm.
But I do think that was my overriding that he was looking, you know, like
really
intently,
lacking in confidence, perhaps.
Well, he wasn't. I don't think he was. He's uncertain. Obviously, he was going to be uncertain. That's an unusual position for any musician to be in.
Yeah.
Oh, look, the main person in the band may suddenly stop playing.
Yeah.
You have to jump in, you know.
How interesting.
Maybe they slightly, they arranged it so that they changed the arrangement, or tried to change the arrangement so that was easier.
So that he could, so he could be rhythm or something.
Again,
like
I said, it was happening at the Dome. Mm. They might have been very careful what they chose. So they might have one thing that might be a bit risky, but they weren't going to have too many because
they had months of experience of having to cover for Sid by this point, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, just so many gigs, didn't they?
That was a bonus to have somebody there. But can I go back over that? Sorry, just to properly understand it. You're telling me that he was almost behind him?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he wasn't behind the amplifiers, he was in front on the stage, almost shadowing Sid. But he was at the back, and Sid was at the front.
I see. Yeah, with a distance between them.
And if he
Sid thought, "I'm off."
Yeah,
and
slightly
I'm
to
off.
One angle, to one side. So
Gilmore could then step forward.
So he was maybe I was projecting partly as well, thinking he must be there to. But he must have been, wasn't he? I mean, that was the idea. It was an emergency measure. They had all these book gigs.
Yeah.
And they didn't want... And obviously the business that happened with the Hendrix tour, they couldn't take any chances. They must have been feeling nervous.
Do you have any sense of how long they played for?
I think they played for a reasonable amount of time.
An hour? At least, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the contract would do. Probably would have at least. And because they were improvising, which they always did, that was, you know, they have extended sort of play. I mean, I can't remember how many numbers they played, but I don't think it was that many.
Mm.
That seemed to be the way they did long numbers, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, so it might be five. And occasionally they'd introduce something else, you know, and they do an encore.
Mm.
But I can't remember how it ended either.
Yeah.
I think they got away with it, but perhaps it was hit and miss all the time. And when I didn't see any of the other, obviously the last one in Hastings, you know,
yes.
Probably that was the final I thought.
The point about hashish, same point in Hastings as well.
Oh, really?
My friend, a chap called Phil Downer, extraordinary coincidence. I work for a firm of solicitors in Kent, and we did a staff quiz. I was always organising a staff quiz, and he put in a question for the staff quiz about himself, about what famous band did his band support in the 1960s. And it turned out to be Pink Floyd, and it turned out to be the Hastings gig. And so he went and watched the gig after his band's performance, and he watched a little bit like you did from the light projectionist perspective. And one of the things he vividly remembers from that gig was the smell of hashish in the changing room, and thinking that's Pink Floyd. He didn't know much about them at the time. All he knew was that they'd had a hit single called See Emily Play, and they seemed to have friendly managers, was what he remembered from them. And he was impressed by the light show.
Oh, yeah, because so that everybody was going on about the lights. It was, and of course, in the gig we're talking about, that was one of the big pitches, wasn't it? You know, the psychedelic freak-out light show.
It was as much as going to see the music.
And it was quite heavily advertised, because I got complicated. They came from the... They were copies of Norman's scrapbook. He kept a scrapbook of these gigs. And I've got some photographs of... from that Mike had sent me from his father's scrapbook of the various the little small adverts in the local paper the Daily Note, but you know, different variations, and it was saying freak out light show, and you know, there was a big emphasis on that, and of course that was that, I mean, as I'm described earlier, I mean it was really major impactful thing. I mean, in those days, and they were famous. There were a few other bands that started to have light shows, but the Floyd, that was their big thing. Oh, the art of sound and light. You see it in some of the adverts.
As you know, you're interested in advertising. It was their unique selling point in some ways. Yeah,
and and also it allowed them to get away when things weren't going too badly. They were lucky to have that cover. If they would have been disastrous if they hadn't, and the distraction of a live show sometimes, you know.
So your overwhelming impression of 19th of January 1968 in Lewis was that the band was okay, keeping it together reasonably.
Well, the
the performance was okay.
I think
okay.
The others were, of course, the others were okay. You know?
Yeah.
As I say, they had a real intention for persisting on the professional to make, you know, to be successful in a way. They wanted to do it in their own way, I think. And that's when it became abundantly clear to them. But they did have that big dilemma, didn't they? Because Sid had been the major person in the band with probably a lot of the best ideas, I should imagine. Mm. And he'd written all the songs. Yeah. And I say, the important thing about him, it was his vision, wasn't it?
Yes.
And they carried his vision on. They were trying to be like him. They were like a tribute band to Sid Barrett.
In many respects, yes. It's not particularly correct to say it, but it feels like that some of the time, doesn't it?
Well, they still, they trade, even now, Nick Mason
trades on it. Yes.
Still getting...
Yeah,
and Roger Waters did. It's worth trading on, but it's...
And it's appropriate as well, because they would have been nothing if it were not for him. And they all acknowledge that, don't they? Which is quite right. Wow. So, January 68, you've been to 5 concerts.
Yeah, I'd like to have gone to more. But, you know, as I say, part of it was money, part of it was positioning. Because, as I said, they were interested because they were never the same twice anyway, for whatever, you know, that was part of their sort of intention, wasn't it, in improvise. I like that idea as well. Even now I do. I like the idea, like jazz musicians, you're attending a unique event. That's, you know.
It's a moment in time,
isn't it? It's not going to be totally predictable, but you might be the only time you're going to experience a particular element or expression or variation, or that makes it more interesting.
A little bit like a painting. Every painting is unique, isn't it? There are no two paintings that are the same.
No, so, I mean, you don't stop painting or just do 5. I like that. So,
Okay, next stop. Sid has left. And it's the 26th of May, 1968, and you're at Falmer House Courtyard, Sussex University.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was really the first
time. An outdoor gig, is that?
How what?
Was it an outdoor gig, that?
Yeah, yes. Mm. It was reasonably, luckily, the weather was okay. The Floyd were outside, and the Social Deviants were inside, and some other bands, which I can't remember. I saw, after the Floyd played, I once saw the last half of the Social Deviants set, you know. That's with Mick Farren. They turned into the Pink Fairies eventually, you know. But yeah, the Floyd were on a small raised sort of stage in the courtyard. It's like open courtyard in the first right. building at Sussex University. And I remember David Gilmour was wearing a brown leather jacket. I remember that.
Sounds cool.
Distinctly. Well, because that was the first time obviously I'd only seen him at the Lewis thing. Mm. And he seemed quite confident. And of course, it was roughly around the time, I'm sure, that it would be so nice and either come out or whatever. Yeah. Well, I think it might have come out.
I think you said to me before they played that, it would be so nice.
Yeah. So it's an, you know, they're sort of making a nod. They were still doing most of the favourites, of course, you know. Mm. I can't remember if they'd played anything else. By then, Set the Controls, of course, were already, playing by the end of the year before, hadn't they? I mean, and they'd sort of, I think they started changing the arrangement a bit, just slightly. Mm. It slowly evolved, because it changed, didn't it, from the version that was Sid played on to...
Got longer.
Yeah, and it had more contrasts and things, didn't it, you know. Mm. And the drums were very much...
Developed.
I remember that gig, certain things, images as well, and it got sort of like twilighty as well, so the light show worked to some degree.
Right.
I projected them onto the big facades of the internal... that way, not onto them so much. Mm. But they had their uplight spotlights. And they had this spotlight by Nick that had a revolving different colour gelatines, you see. Mm. And it was sort of, it span round on this focus spotlight. So what they had the effect with, when you looked at him, when he was playing the drums, he looked like Shiva or something, a many-armed god.
Oh, fantastic,
know? So you'd be a red arm and a green and a yellow or a blue, which was an amazing sort of effect, you know.
He was really coming to the fore at that point, I think.
Yeah, his drum.
He was. I mean, I feel like he helped fill the gap.
Well, I think
their confidence was low, he was such an important, integral part of the band in a way that perhaps he wasn't quite so much during
but
the Sid era.
Maybe you could argue, as we were saying, the fact that Sid became more unreliable, the others all had to step into the brink, which may have in some ways done them phases in developing their techniques and their contribution in another way. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and then it peaks at Pompeii, doesn't it? Which it seems like the cameramen at Pompeii only wanted to film Nick, didn't they?
Drummers, you said,
they're more visual.
Well, they're very boring, the Pink Floyd, aren't they?
They are,
visually. Mm. Apart from Waters when he does smashes the cymbals, I think partly he had to start doing things like that because they had to make more of a show of it, didn't they, really? Yeah. Because their instincts seemed to be quite sort of just stand there, like in a very sort of an obtrusive way, which is not theatrical, is it really?
So a more confident band by May than they were in January.
A bit more confident, yeah. I would say they knew. I mean, he was very reliable, wasn't he, David? And he was a very good musician in that sense. I felt, to be honest, I was slightly sceptical about him because he's basically a blues musician, and I like Sid's approach, which was completely from another world, really. He invented new ways of playing the guitar and using
category.
It as a sound generating machine. Mm. And I felt David's natural instincts were much more conventional.
Melodic.
Melodic. Mm. And, the blues element. And it was very much like we were saying about conventional music. And even the electronic bits he did, it sort of, oh, I better learn to play a bit like Sid, you know. I felt it was like, not good, you know, sort of forced, but his instincts were that way. And I felt he might be a bit more conventional too. But I grew to like him in a different way if you don't compare him to Sid, you know. That's the best way of sort of approaching it, I think. Mm. But obviously we always miss Sid. And we all hoped he'd still come back. There was still some suggestion. At that time, he was just going through a bad phase, and possibly,
press.
And maybe come back in some way. But it's only retrospectively we know that what the story was, you know.
Did you go with Bobby to that concert?
So which one?
Did you go with Bobby to that concert?
I can't remember if he was there or not at that time. I don't think he was.
I was thinking from the photography perspective, because you two haven't taken a picture for a while now.
I didn't take the camera there. Because I think I didn't know it's going to be outside.
Mm.
And anyway, I don't think they really started playing till the light level was quite low. Because that's the other thing. When you're especially in black and white film, well, not black and white, just
black and white can be more forgiving.
It's very demanding. Mm. I mean, even when I started taking photographs, even when I could get the best, highest speed film you could get, in other words, the most sensitive film, it still wasn't enough. And a moving thing, it just becomes a blur, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So it was technically very problematic to photograph them live. And digital cameras are a completely different thing now, aren't they, you know?
Yeah.
They're much more sensitive to all sorts of light conditions, so that isn't a problem.
Better in many respects, aren't they? A lot less risky, a lot less expensive to keep
Well, that's the other thing. It cost me, basically, it cost me quite a lot of money. I had to buy a film, had to pay for it to develop, have it printed. It was, you know, when you're still at school or, you know, 15 or 16 or 17 or whatever, you know, and you have clothes to buy and all that. Your parents aren't going to give you a limitless amount of money. So that's another thing. You can't afford to waste things where you don't think it's got a good chance of even working, you know.
Yeah. So you're about 17 years old at this stage?
Well, I'm 16 until I'm birthday's in March, so I would have been 17 then.
Impressive.
Still at school, because I'd originally intended to go to art school when I was 17, because you couldn't apply until you were 17, and I thought I would go to Brighton. They turned me down, the bastards. I mean, and I was really surprised. I got accepted to another one, but it was a bit lesser. I thought, if I'm going to go to art school, I want to go to a good one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Insulting. So your next concert, 29th of June, summertime, Midsummer High Weekend at the Cockpit.
Oh, yeah, well, that's an extraordinary...
And I think there's a picture here for this, isn't there, as you reach to your left.
Now, so that was in the open air, and I had my camera then. I think it was a Zenit-E SLR reflex camera by then.
Do you remember what lens you had on the front of it?
They're Russian, I think they were originally.
Yeah, isn't it like a bit like a Pentax?
Yeah, yeah, it's a sort of poor man's Pentax, or poor boy's Pentax.
Yeah, but you could still fit them out.
Yeah, yeah, and
you?
I started had to teach myself how to all use it, you know, all the lenses in the right way.
You were manual. You weren't aperture or.
Oh yeah, so that it was at the Cockpit, which is. By the Serpentine, isn't it? You know, not far from this bridge. They call it the Cockpit. I don't know why and what was happening there one time. It was just a dip in a green. So I got there early. I made a point of getting there early. Because it was the first free concert in Hyde Park.
Big crowd.
Well, there was not many people when I first arrived.
Yeah.
And so again, it was a very small stage. It was, you know, the group and their equipment could just about get on the stage. And it was... Again, not very high. It was like sort of 2 foot high, 3 foot high, something like that. And I got there very early. And I've got a few photographs of that. I mean, I haven't got them all here, but this was before it started. They were all people were milling about as John Peel.
There's a picture here.
And Roy Harper.
John Peel on the right.
I don't know that is.
Roy Harper ended up on the stage, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I'll show you.
Yeah.
And that's June... who married Mark Bolan.
Ah, right, yeah. Nice picture of John Peel.
So, this is, I don't know if you can see, that's them on stage. So basically my position, I thought, I could sit here on the stage, behind the organ, you see.
So you were sat on the edge of the stage?
No, behind the organ.
Behind it, okay.
I was literally, if I'm sitting in a chair here, I'd be Nick Wright, Rick Wright, and to the right would be me.
Wow.
I'll show you how close I was from...
I'm looking at an image here. It's Nick Mason on the left. His symbol dominates the centre of the shot, and then there's...
So that's...
David Gilmour on the right.
Now, this is one of my star...
I recognise this photograph.
This is in the book.
this is Roger Waters playing from the other side of
Rick's keyboard. See, look, there's Wright's finger.
Yes.
I was literally that close.
Yeah.
I could have played chopsticks on that side of the, in the middle of the performance. I could literally reach the keyboard.
Yeah. You were audacious getting in that position for that photograph, weren't you?
Yes. You always got to have nerve, haven't you?
Yeah.
You don't get anywhere without nerve.
Behave like you belong, and nobody will push you away, I suppose.
Well,
and
I think it was also this. Don't forget, it was all it was free.
Yeah.
It was also part of the spirit of the time.
A free for all.
You know, we're all one together. You know, just like
you're pretty off-putting being that close, aren't you? Would you have zoomed in to have taken
that
shot?
He's playing Interstellar Overdrive there.
I can see.
You know the bit where he goes tick-tock, tick-tock?
Yeah.
That's him. That's very distinctive. And he's got the Rickenbacker, the famous Rickenbacker guitar. And, of course, that was stolen, apparently, I think, wasn't it, ultimately?
Yeah. It was,
And then he started playing a Fender bass after that, didn't he? But that was much more distinctive, wasn't it?
Amazing.
And he's got sunglasses on, of course, you know, because it's a sunny day. That's another one of those, you know, sort of inched round the side, you see.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to lose my position.
Yeah.
Look, there's another one of, how's that for close?
That's brilliant. This is another picture of Roger Waters and the keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally, I could touch the, I could touch the organ.
That sounds, it's a little double entendre.
So I couldn't move too much without losing my position, you see.
Yeah.
So that's I managed to sneak around a little bit.
You can see this how compact the crowd is and how, if you had moved, that would have been the end of that and you would have had somebody right blocking your view, your perspective, wouldn't you? But there were other people evidently with cameras there.
Anyway, by the time they were on, because Jethro Tull and Tyrannosaurus Rex were supporting them.
What a nice set. So how many pictures you got there? About six or seven?
There's Mark Bolan.
Ah, is that one of yours as well?
Yeah, that was his. I only took two pictures of him because I thought I only had a certain number of pictures and I was there for the Floyd. Ooh. I only took one picture of Jethro Tull because I thought I can't take it too many because I've only got 136 images, you know.
Mark Bolan often looks a bit like Sid, doesn't he? He does.
So you could see by then the audience was thousands.
Yeah.
And then, of course, by the time the Floyd, that's Roy Harper adjusting the mic, you see, and that's old Peregrine Took's drums.
Yeah, who would go on to play with
Sid. That's somebody standing there next to me.
But it's a lovely shot, isn't it? And it'd make a good crop as well if somebody wanted to publish it.
So that's, Tyrannosaurus Rex was supporting.
So you've got a good six or seven pictures there.
Yeah, there's a few. See, look, those are some of the original prints, actually.
Ah, so you've had them blown up.
I have these done from the negative later, the bigger ones, but these are some of the originals.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you got them like that.
Yeah.
When you pay.
They have excellent quality, aren't they?
This is a great shot of Roy Harper hitting the cymbals. Oh. And I think it was in Source of Fuller Secrets. So he joined in and started hitting. And you can show how.
And you can see the audience just
they're
smiling.
They're literally on the stage.
Smiling on.
There's hardly any room for the band to play.
Yeah, and you can see the wires just look like anybody could just kind of like pull a plug out any minute.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
The sound's gone. Love Mason's bass drum there, Floyd written.
These have never been published. I'm waiting for a massive offer.
Whoa. Yeah.
I mean, obviously the one that's in the flesh has been, but none of the others.
Don't put them online because they'll just be stolen.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I've been very jealously guarding them.
Yeah.
That's Roger playing. I was trying to sort of steal images where I could, you see. Mm. That may be, the way it's doing it, it may be Source of Full of Secrets. You know, there's a long bass run in that, isn't
there?
And that's the end of Interstellar Overdrive.
Oh, fantastic.
Where they go, boom, boom,
with the bass
boom.
Guitar up, because I recognise that.
And
stunning.
Yeah, that's the main run with those. There are a few others which I.
There's another concert there, I can see.
Yeah, that's
next in the pile. We're going to get to that shortly.
That's the Bath Festival.
Ah.
But I wasn't very. I have got one image I took at that, but it was hopeless because the light levels were so low. But we're a long way away from them.
No, we're still very much in summer of '68 here. So a good performance, and you got some photographs. So you're now becoming more the person who's recording events.
I was interested in photography as well, and the things you like when photography, it sort of concurs, doesn't it? Mm. You want to take pictures of rock bands that you really like and pretty girls, which is a good thing to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Particularly, and I did obviously a few arty things as well, So I had an intention to take photography a little bit. So I was 17 then, just 17. And where I could, I did try and photograph them.
And you're beginning to record at home as well, because you've captured some BBC performances, haven't you, by that stage? You captured their December 67 Top Gear and the repeat in February with Nick Mason being interviewed. So you're beginning to be like the person who has an instinct to catalogue things.
We take Top Gear in 67.
Mm.
That's where, obviously, that's where the first places you sometimes heard certain numbers, and they had things like Reaction and G, and then of course you had Scream the Last Scream, which I think is the better recording than the one that they did in the studio.
Yeah, it's a better performance.
And in fact, I've actually been in that studio where they recorded it years ago when I used to go around, I used to drive a group around for a while when I was about 50-odd, and they actually recorded the same studio. The BBC studio, but also the Beatles and most major bands have played in that studio. In Maida Vale, the small one.
Yes.
It's all like a broad, it almost like Swedish in a way. It was all sort of wood-lined.
It's a curious building, isn't it? And they're not using it anymore. I went to try and visit it, and they wouldn't let me in, unfortunately.
It's a shame, I was lucky to catch that. I remember thinking, when I was there, thinking, this is history.
I was about to say, I thought, this is history, you should keep it. But that's not the plan, I don't think. I don't know whether it's actually proceeded since, but it was certainly put on the market, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a shame, really. I mean, but it was fascinating. I mean, they got such an amazing. I don't know how many tapes they've got surviving still, but that was, as I say, with the Floyd, trying to stick with the Floyd, is that?
Yeah.
We used to play those tapes, like a lot of the tapes. We used to play it that's one of the reasons we started live taping, because. You know, it was like having another record of your own, wasn't it? And if you liked your favourite tapes, you played them again and again. It wasn't just
on
one occasion or something. And it was very rich, that period. I think they did about three sessions, didn't they, 67? And then, of course, they carried
on. Two in 67, then you caught them twice in 68 as well.
Yeah.
Most notably the Radio 1 Club recording, which is unique, rather than important recording.
Seems.
Yes, yeah.
Well, I actually was, it was interesting that, wasn't it? Because I heard they were going to be on it, and I was at school, of course.
It was your lunch break, I think.
So it was they used to be on from 1 to 2, I think, wasn't it? And of course, they didn't play all the time. They spaced the songs through the thing. Mm. And I thought, well, I had my reel-to-reel, my Telefunken, which I taped various. Which is quite a reasonably big thing. I took it into school, and there was a sixth form common room. This was my new school I'd moved to, by the way. I had gone back to school by then, you know, because I'd do two A levels so I could get into a better art college, I thought. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I took it to school, and we were in there, and I managed to do, but of course, I only got two of the numbers.
Indeed, yeah.
Because the other two numbers were after we went, the school
else.
Bell went, and
yeah.
I got Point Me at the Sky and
careful with that axe, Eugene.
Yeah, careful with the axe, Eugene. Well, I think probably if you had to take, and there would have been Let Them In, wasn't it? I remember it, Mommy, here. I can remember it, but obviously unfortunately I couldn't tape it. But No, it turns out, even the BBC haven't got a version.
No, indeed. very fitting for
it. Was that recorded in the Regent Street studios?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Because my friend went to some of those. He saw the Pink Floyd there, and I must ask him if he was there. It might have been a slightly too early for him. I think it might have been.
Quite a young sounding audience.
Yeah, yeah, were. He saw loads of people there. It was all free, of course.
Wasn't it?
He's all sorts of famous people, you know, famous bands. It was quite and he worked not far away and used to go in his luncher.
Interestingly, of course, you're at Hyde Park, so that's your first London concert. But you're still at school locally in Sussex.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because that was a weekend, wasn't
so
it?
You were able to go up there.
And my grandparents lived up there, so I could. And I was getting a bit older, so I must have got. I think I'd done a few jobs and things here and there, you know, like part-time jobs on the holidays to augment my meagre income. You know. And so when I was free, I had a little bit more money.
Yeah. So your next gig was Middle Earth.
Yeah.
At the Roundhouse.
Yeah, yeah, because they closed the one down in Covent Garden. They moved the name, although I did.
26th of October, that one was.
Yeah, I remember that. Because Yes were the support band. They were a new band in those days.
Yeah.
And Steve Howe was the lead guitarist. And I'd really rather like Tomorrow. In fact, I'd seen them when they were the In Crowd a few times. And then they became Tomorrow. But I saw them when they were billed as being In Crowd, but they were playing Tomorrow's music, and you can imagine the mods hated it. They were expecting soul covers, and they got all this weird Arabic sounding stuff.
Thing at all.
But anyway, so Steve Howe was, he was in Yes, and they were the support band. And also, I remember, this has always become a joke, isn't it? I remember in the audience, you know, people milling about, there was a guy in a sports jacket, and it became a sort of joke amongst people, and Bonzo Dog make an allusion to something like that, is the CID used to go there because of there might be people having selling drugs or whatever.
Oh.
But they didn't dress as hippies. They just sort of
like dressed for the weekend. Not exactly plain clothes.
Like a country gentleman or something. And so they were bleeding obvious, you know. So what I remember about the Floyd set there, that was the only time I ever went to the Roundhouse in those days, funnily enough. Someplace, it was a bit more difficult to get to, I think, in my mind or whatever, partly. Yeah. But anyway, I do remember them playing Corporal Clegg.
Right.
Again, it's got a very distinctive...
Yeah, stands out.
And of course, it's the Wild War, of course, isn't it? Yeah. And they would have done some of the usual things as well, yeah.
Was it a good place to go to a gig in 68? Was the Roundhouse a good place to go to a gig in 68?
Well, it was a bit of a drafty... That was the other thing. I didn't think it was that great. It was
reputation.
A bit of a drafty hole in a
Acoustics,
way.
Acoustics, all
didn't,
right.
It's terribly sacrilegious probably to say so, but...
Yeah.
Obviously it was potentially a good space, but it wasn't that comfortable, really. Mm. It was quite cold, I remember.
Yeah.
Cold and drafty.
Yeah.
And perhaps you had to take drugs to be able to survive.
Basically.
Yeah, very basic, I think.
Wow. So that's you done with 68.